and welcome to the Aldi podcast. I'm Ferdy Rouse, the Aldi's editorial assistant. Every 10 years, the Bavarian town of Oberammergau puts on a passion play, a dramatic representation of the passion of Jesus Christ, and this year is a performing year. Joining us today is the author, journalist and travel writer William Cook, who has written about both town and play in the latest issue of the magazine. William, it's great to have you back on the podcast.
Great to be here.
So, how did Oberammergau get its play?
Well, it's a very long story, and a really kind of fascinating one. It all goes back to the 30 Years' War, basically, which was a complete catastrophe for the whole of Central Europe, but Germany in particular lost about a third of its population, I think. And in the aftermath of this war, there were various plagues, and a plague swept through Bavaria, which is where Oberammergau is, and you know, people were panic-stricken, and a lot of the villagers of Oberammergau, which is a very beautiful, small town in the Bavarian Alps, they made this vow to God that if he spared them, they'd enact the Easter story every 10 years forevermore. And that's what they did, and nobody else was spared, apparently. Historians have quibbled about various details of this fable of this myth, but that's the gist of it, basically. Is they said they put on this passion play, they did, they carried on doing it every 10 years. There have been a few breaks down the years. I don't think it was put on in 1940, but that's pretty much it, actually. I mean, more or less every 10 years ever since the 1630s, it's been this annual event, It's been an event every 10 years, and it's spectacular. I mean, it's an incredible thing, not just the show itself, but the whole surroundings, the whole community, and it's a really special affair.
I mean, every sort of 10 years, it draws in about, what, like 500,000, half a million people come?
Yeah.
Is there any particular reason that it became so famous itself? Is it the sheer scale of the production? I mean, the entire town gets involved, or is it something unique about the play itself?
Well, the weird thing is during the Middle Ages, as I understand it, there were lots of these passion plays, and Oberammergau originally wasn't that unusual. But what happened was, one way or another, the Catholic Church put a stop to them, because obviously in all these little villages, everybody was doing their own thing, and they're, you know, rather like the mystery plays in England. You know, they were often very kind of irreverent and bawdy and so on, and the Catholic Church sort of felt, you know, they weren't in control of this whole folkloric process. So they kind of put a stop to it. And as I understand it, the reason that Oberammergau survived was they had a very close relationship with this incredible monastery called Ettal, beautiful place, which is just down the road. And anyone who goes to Oberammergau, whether it's during the Passion Play or outside of it, should make a trip there. You can walk there. It's a sort of 3 or 4 mile walk from Oberammergau. Ettal, the monastery there, was very important, and they kind of took charge of this passion play and kind of sanctioned it and everything. And so while all these other passion plays were being obliterated and kind of shut down by the Catholic Church, Oberammergau survived.
Mm. So why was Ettal so important? What was the significance of it?
Well, it was just one of these very important monasteries kind of that you get dotted around Central Europe. And, you know, these places were a kind of law unto themselves. It's a bit like Salzburg was a kind of bishopric, sort of almost a little country of its own. I mean, Ettal wasn't quite like that, but it was a very important part of the whole kind of Catholic system there. And so if they could sort of say, well, actually, the monks of Ettal have overseen this passion play and sort of sanctioned it, and they're in charge of the script and everything, then the Catholic Church kind of gave them a free pass, and so it survived.
Sure. But in terms of the play itself and how it actually works, who puts it on?
Well, I mean, this is the extraordinary thing. I mean, it's the villagers who put it on, and there's about 5,000 people who live in Oberammergau, which is pretty tiny by modern standards, and pretty much everybody is involved in some way or another. I mean, there are several hundred people on stage, there are dozens of speaking parts, there are obviously about a dozen kind of lead parts, but then, you know, it's a cast of hundreds, if not thousands, animals on stage, livestock and so on, children on stage, But it's not just the people taking part in the play. Obviously, there's all the admin as well, the set building. And then it's all the stuff that's going on in the village as well. They have a professional director, but everyone else is amateurs. But you'd never guess it when you see the show. I mean, it's incredibly professional and, you know, bears comparison with anything you'd see on the professional stage here in England or anywhere else.
But I noticed in your piece you talk about, I'm not certain about the pronunciation of the family name, but Stuckel?
Yeah, well, they're a really key family. And I went along and saw Peter Stuckel this time, and he's a real kind of institution. I mean, he's a kind of example of what a special thing this play is. I mean, he's going to be in the play this summer in 2020. He made his first appearance in 1950, and in that appearance he was appearing alongside his grandfather. Now, 70 years later, he's appearing alongside his grandchildren, and he's obviously played all sorts of different parts in the meantime. I saw him 20 years ago on stage playing Caiaphas, who's the Pharisee, the religious elder that condemns Jesus. His son has also played a really key role in this. His son Christian Stuckel, he's the director of the play, and he's a professional director, and he's based in Munich. But he did grow up in Abramaco, so he's very much one of the villagers as well.
Is it sort of with the whole family presence? Is it quite almost dynastic in a way with the way the roles are chosen, or do people just sort of take different roles as the years go by?
Well, people take different roles as the years go by. I mean, there's no family that's got kind of control over it at all. And actually, the reason that Peter Stuckel is kind of interesting, and I used him in his piece, he's one of many people who have this generational relationship with the play. You think this guy was extraordinary, and that I was interviewing him because he had this extraordinary relationship, but actually he's worth interviewing because he's a good example of what lots of families have. You know, it's typical to find families there whose relationship with the play dates back centuries. You know, I mean, it's a very stable population, very few people have moved in or out, and it's absolutely normal to find people whose parents are in the play, whose grandparents are in the play, and so on and so forth, going all the way back.
Is it, and how does it, what is it like for them? I mean, you give some quite interesting sort of descriptions of how people describe it, its effect on them. I mean, is it almost a religious rite to be cast in it?
Well, it's a funny thing. I mean, I sort of feel it's almost a bit more religious for the spectators than it is for the people taking part, because they're obviously involved in a production that is, you know, very professional in all but name, you know, in apart from the fact that they don't really get paid. I mean, they get a kind of stipend, you know, so that they're not out of pocket for doing it. They're very involved in the production as a sort of epic theatrical production. I mean, it's about 6 hours long, and they perform it every day for three or four months through the summer. So, I mean, they're sort of very involved in the practicalities of it. I think for the spectators who go along, and I certainly found this myself in 2000 when I saw the Passion Play, it feels very much like a religious thing, because the journey there is a kind of a pilgrimage. You fly into Munich, but then it's about 100 kilometres, and you can get there fairly easily by train or car. But you still feel like you're going out into the countryside, into the foothills of the Alps, into a very kind of special, unspoilt place. And then once you're there, the whole village is kind of involved in it. There isn't a single corner of the village which isn't part of the Passion Play. Historically, there's a lot of the town, and a lot of its money from wood carving these religious figures for Catholic churches and so on, altar pieces and stuff. And there's still a lot of that going there. And I remember when I was staying there in 2000, you know, kind of walking home, walking back to the place I was staying, and seeing all the different wood carvers still working late into the night. It's a very magical atmosphere.
Yeah. It sounds very, it's very steeped in tradition. It maintains the traditional sort of lifestyle. Is that
right? Yeah, I mean, it's partly because the place is so small. I mean, it's very well connected, but it's only 5,000 people there, which is tiny. Mm. I mean, it's like a few kind of main streets, and you can walk out of town within a few minutes. You'll be in sort of woods and meadows. The area is kind of protected. It's sort of like a national park, so I guess it's a bit like somewhere here that was in the Lake District or something like that. So it's, there's not kind of big urban developments around there at all. And obviously during, I mean, it's a great place to go and stay at any time, but obviously when the Passion plays on, all the sort of ordinary hotels and guest houses and stuff are all booked up. But that doesn't matter because everyone kind of rents out their private rooms, and you can, you know, I ended up staying in somebody's kind of spare bedroom in their house that was a, you know, a mile or so out of town, but that was great. It was all part of the fun of it.
Yeah, it sounds terribly inviting. But in terms of, you said you went sort of 20 years ago this year, actually.
Mm. But I've been back several times since, as a traveller, as a visitor, yeah.
Sure. But in terms of the actual play itself, when you first saw it, I mean, if it's not too cliche a question, what was the most striking thing? I mean, what did you come away with?
Well, I mean, it is a very moving experience. I mean, I'm a C of E Anglican person, and I found it kind of really overwhelming, actually. It's all in German, but that doesn't really matter because you get a booklet with a translation in English as well. I mean, you know, I speak some German, but to be honest, it's no more difficult than following an opera that's in German or Italian or something, and actually a lot more straightforward because everyone knows the story, obviously. So it's not difficult to follow. It is very intense. One of the things that makes it so special is actually the surrounding countryside. The stage is open. The audience is undercover, but the stage is open, and the backdrop to the stage is open as well. So you've got all these incredible mountain peaks behind, and forests, and so on. So that is very dramatic as well. And like I say, they bring live animals in. Even though it's very choreographed and very, very well done, there's a kind of rawness about it. It feels very sort of personal. And obviously those 6 hours is very magical, but it's also the whole experience. I remember when I first arrived there, I went to this sort of, I think it was there, just the kind of reception centre where you just kind of turn up and introduce yourself. And they had this big map up on the wall of the world, and everyone had come along and put a pin in the map from where they're from, mm-hmm. which is actually really interesting journalistically because you could see at a glance where most of the people had come from. But it was also fascinating and sort of a great thing to take part in as well. You know, you feel you've made this journey there. And it's always been popular with, in particular, Americans, British people and Scandinavians, funny enough. I mean, they do get people from all over, but those have always been the big three groups.
Interestingly, none of which are Catholic.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And I mean, I did sort of, I did ask people about this. And obviously, most of the people who, the vast majority of people who live in Bavaria are Catholic, and actually, you know, nearly all the performers in the play, although not all nowadays, they've kind of loosened the rules a bit, which is quite interesting. But yeah, it is still a Catholic production in a Catholic village, town, whatever, in a Catholic part of the country. But I wonder whether it isn't because Protestant countries or sort of Anglican, Episcopalian, whatever, don't have the same kind of rites and rituals, maybe. And so it is more appealing to us. But partly also it's because Thomas Cook and co got in on the game pretty quickly. And it became one of these things that people did, rather like travelling to Lucerne or these other kind of epic trips that Thomas Cook organised in the 19th century. It sort of got on the map then as well.
Mm. I mean, how did you come to it though? You say you're sort of C of E, it's not like a, I mean, was it something you'd heard through the Thomas Cook? Was it, do you have a personal connection to the
area? Yeah, well, I guess my personal connection is my father's German originally. I've got a German passport. I've got dual citizenship, and so I've always been writing about Germany and travelling to Germany, and the two things are kind of mixed up, really, in my past and my history. And so I was always interested in it. My grandma had been there. My German grandmother had been there in the 30s, and so that was intriguing. But also, I mean, it's one of the things that's really kind of on the map if you're travelling around Germany. I mean, it's a bit like Bayreuth or going to Mad King Ludwig's castles or whatever. I mean, it's pretty much, it's kind of on the tourist trail. I mean, that makes it sound like it's a bit naff or kitsch or something. It's not. It's very authentic, but it's kind of one of the sort of things you sort of tick off if you're travelling around Germany as well. So it wasn't that much of a stretch to go there. But it actually really exceeded my expectations when I went. I think I went for the first time a few years before the Passion Play, then went back for the Passion Play. So I went first in the 90s, went in 2000 to see the show, and I've been back several times since. And I like it each time I go, I like it more, actually. I think it's a really special place. And the proximity to the countryside, I mean, that's the main thing. I mean, it really is.
You do really sell it as being very fairy tale in a way, like, you know, the castles and the sort of the whole surroundings.
I mean, it's kind of rugged too. I mean, you know, but the Bavarian Alps is great for walking for people of a certain age, like myself. Not that everyone who reads The Oldie or listens to the podcast is old, but, you know, it is very versatile. I mean, if you go into the Swiss Alps and it's, you know, everything's getting on for 2,000, 3,000 metres, that can be can take a bit of organising, you know, whereas actually the Bavarian Alps, most of it is sort of 800, 900 metres, which is a good sort of altitude to walk at. And for instance, you know, you can do lots of very gentle walks from Oberammergau because it's kind of in a valley, but you know, you can make it as easy or as intrepid as you want. I mean, it's very kind of user-friendly place, you know.
Sure. Just to segue a bit into the history of it, we've covered a bit of the sort of the Catholic bands and the sort of how it managed to survive, but it's quite a turbulent 20th century.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think one of the things that makes Oberammergau interesting is because it's been at the forefront of the whole kind of crisis in Germany to do with Judaism and Holocaust in particular. And, you know, I think the paradox is that because it's one of the very few surviving passion plays, you're getting this window on the medieval mindset, or certainly the Renaissance kind of mindset, pre-Enlightenment mindset. And that is a mindset that in the Christian church, to my mind, is very, very anti-Semitic, you know. And so this play survived from that time, but then this play is then being produced in the 20th century, when most of the other equivalent plays have died out. And so obviously, after the Holocaust, after the, you know, Third Reich and the Second World War and so on, it's been very much the focus of a lot of examination by Jewish groups who are not necessarily opposed to the whole concept of it. And a lot of them became very kind of interested and involved in it, lots of Jewish academics and historians and so on. But feeling that you know, you couldn't just carry on producing this, you know, pretty kind of medieval play after after what happened in
especially
Germany.
As it was taken as it was used as propaganda more or less by the Nazi Party in 1934, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, they had a special tercentenary production of it. First production 1634, tercentenary 1934, and Hitler went along to one of these productions of it, and I've got, you know, I mean, it was kind of co-opted. I don't think they didn't transform it, but they co-opted it just like they co-opted the Olympics or the Winter Olympics or Wagner or Bayreuth. It certainly wasn't, you know, it was certainly something they could grab hold of and sort of put a wrapper around. I think that's probably the best way of putting it. But then after the Second World War, there was a feeling they just, you know, it wasn't enough to say, oh, well, this is a historical thing. This is what they were doing in the 17th century, and we're just doing it now. There's the feeling that, well, things have got to change. You can't just, especially here in Germany, you can't just carry on doing it in the same way. And so, actually, the play's been quite thoroughly revised. And Christian Stuckel, Peter Stuckel's son, who's the director now, he's been a key sort of part of this. And one of the things, I mean, I interviewed him in 2000 when I went to see the performance, And what came across then is one of the things is that he really wanted to put the fact that Jesus was historically a Jew. You know, he wanted to put that centre stage. Mm-hmm. And so the Last Supper has a very kind of Jewish Friday night meal kind of feel. The disciples are all, you know, very Jewish. Jesus is very Jewish. The whole thing is steeped within a kind of Jewish world. And I'm not Jewish myself, so I can't speak for what it feels like to a Jewish person. But certainly watching it, I didn't feel this is sort of Jesus versus the Jews. This is like Jesus the Jew, you know, within that context. Are there still things that are uncomfortable about it? There are to an extent, but I mean, you know, there are things that are problematic about the gospel stories. You know, I mean, you've got Jesus crucified in a Roman way on a cross, and then, you know, quite a lot of stuff kind of explaining how it was a Jewish thing that he was killed rather than a Roman thing or whatever. And obviously, this is a huge subject that I'm not sort of qualified to dissect. But I mean, my feeling is personally that it is certainly no more anti-Semitic than the Gospels upon which it's based. Mm-hmm. And that actually Ober Ammergau has probably gone further than a lot of institutions now in terms of tackling those problematic things.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, sure. I think just to round off, what are you most looking forward to about going back to it this year?
Well, I mean, the whole... Not just the show, but I think what makes it really special, I mean, obviously you can go there any time, and it's always a special place to go to at any time. And they actually do have performances of all sorts of other things in the theatre, from kind of operas to, you know, other plays to whatever at any other time. So there's always lots going on in any year. But I think what makes it so special is the fact that the whole village is taking part, and that this extends beyond the theatre. You know, you're in a whole village that is just focused on this thing for 3 or 4 months of the year, and actually for a kind of year leading up to it. Even when I went there in the autumn, I mean, everybody was kind of gearing up for this thing and rehearsing and getting ready and preparing. And I think especially in our day and age, where even if you live in a small town or a village, you know, everybody's off doing their own thing. It is incredible to be in a place where everybody's kind of doing one thing together. And I mean, if that thing is also for me a kind of act of worship, that is extra special.
I think that's a perfect place to stop. William, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast.
Pleasure.